It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 907 for the 8th of November, 2024. This week, two words make my teeth itch when I hear them, particularly when I hear them from photographers. Someone who claims to be artistic and creative probably should use always and never rarely, if at all. In short circuits, Facebook seems to be the most annoying application on Earth, yet people rarely abandon it. There are ways to make it better, at least on computers, and I recently switched from one of the primary players to the other. And we need to get to the BIOS settings screen rarely, and getting there can be difficult. What if you could put an icon on your desktop and get there with just a single click? Photographers can be an opinionated group, and I'm about to prove that I belong in that group. No serious photographer will ever use film smaller than 4x5 inches for portraits. No legitimate wedding photographer will ever use a 35mm camera. You're not a real photographer if you use an autofocus camera. Digital cameras will never replace film, and so on. These days, it's any serious photographer would use only manual mode. Or you can't get a decent image out of a phone. Or even nobody who knows anything about photography will ever shoot JPEG format. Nonsense. So much nonsense. Never say never is an oxymoron, but it's worth keeping in mind when you pull out the camera. And what camera will you pull out? Until 2022, when I suffered a spinal injury that left me with impaired balance, I generally carried a big, heavy digital SLR. But even then, I often took a much smaller camera, unless I needed specific features the larger camera offered. And occasionally, I even used the camera in the phone. These days, I use the camera in my phone most of the time. The small Sony camera when I need more control over various settings, and the big, heavy Canon almost never. So there are two topics here, picking the right camera and choosing the right format. Most digital cameras and even smartphones can capture and store raw images. These are files with extensions such as CRW, CR2, CR3 for Canon cameras, ARW for many Sony cameras, NEF for Nikon cameras, and DNG for several other camera manufacturers. With the exception of DNG, each of the file formats is proprietary, meaning that no photo editing application other than the one provided by the camera manufacturer can edit the files directly. DNG is an open source format, and a few cameras can even save files in TIFF format. RAW files are always larger than JPEG files because they include all of the information captured by the camera's sensor. Although there are other formats for digital images, I'm primarily considering proprietary RAW formats, DNG, and JPEG. Other formats, such as TIFF, PNG, GIF, BMP, and JPEG, are primarily choices for outputting finished work. So JPEG can be used for the original image or to output the final cropped and edited image from a RAW file. The primary difference between a JPEG image and a RAW image, aside from the size of the file, is that the RAW file is an unprocessed record of all the data from the camera's sensor. Your photo editing application converts the data to a viewable image. The JPEG file will be smaller because it will have already been converted from the RAW image in the camera and saved in a finished, ready-to-share format. Both RAW and JPEG files will have the same dimensions, but a RAW file that might consume 20 megabytes of space or more will be 5 megabytes or less as a JPEG. Those who want to have the greatest amount of control will be likely to use RAW files, but they will need to spend some time and effort on every image. JPEG images reflect the camera's best guess at exposure, contrast, color balance, and more. Once the camera has baked these adjustments into the file, it discards a lot of data. That's the factor that limits what can be modified later. Applications such as Adobe Lightroom, Photoshop, Exposure, and others interpret RAW files so they can be modified, but they cannot write changes back to the RAW file unless you've converted the camera manufacturer's RAW file to the open-source DNG file format created by Adobe. DNG stands for Digital Negative. If you retain the camera's RAW file, the application you use to edit it will store information about the modifications in a catalog file or in a separate sidecar file that's stored alongside the digital image. Some camera manufacturers use Adobe's DNG format, but the larger manufacturers, Nikon, Canon, Sony, do not. Many cameras can create both RAW and JPEG images simultaneously. I used that option to create some images with my phone. So let's take a look at some images. You'll find them on the TechBiter Worldwide website, www.techbiter.com. 15 images, JPEG images from the phone in the left column, RAW images from the phone in the middle column, and RAW images from a digital camera in the right column. The images in rows 1 and 2 are of a caboose. Rows 3, 4, and 5 show an image of the old Worthington Library. The first row shows the photos of the caboose as they came from the camera. Note particularly the loss of detail under the caboose where the wheels are, down in the shadowed area. In row 2, you'll see the final results after I edited the images in Lightroom Classic 2025. My primary objective was to improve visible detail around the wheels without losing detail in any of the highlights. Image 4 is the most surprising. Even though I had started with a JPEG image from a Google Pixel 8 phone, quite a lot of the detail was restored in the dark areas. The raw image from the phone is arguably a bit better despite oversaturated reds. And as expected, the raw image from the camera, a Sony RX100 Mark VI, is the best of the three. So for the images of the library, row 3 shows images directly as they came from the camera. In row 4, you'll see my final images. I started with image 12, that's the one from the camera, and after increasing the exposure a bit in the shadowed areas, I used Lightroom Classic's ability to mask an image based on color values to select the sunlit parts of the driveway so I could darken it. That worked well on the raw image from the camera. It was less successful on the raw image from the phone, and it didn't produce an acceptable result at all on the JPEG image from the phone. And there's one additional row. Row 5 is a 200% enlargement of the original image. There are few surprises here. The JPEG image shows some artifacting and some jagged lines. The raw image has none of the artifacting, but there's a general softness apparent. That did surprise me a bit. And the image from the camera is clearly the best quality, with no artifacting or jagged lines. Given additional time, I could further improve each of the images, but the resulting final images that I show are well within the good enough range that I often shoot for. Clearly, if you are looking for the best possible quality, use a camera with the largest sensor and lenses you can afford. Shoot only in RAW mode, place the camera on a tripod, and shoot a series of at least 3 bracketed exposures. Otherwise, just pull out your phone and press the button. Most people won't notice the difference. With photography, it's almost always about matching the camera and the shooting style to the needs of the task at hand. And at the bottom of this article on the TechBiter Worldwide website, you can see and even download full-size images to compare them against each other. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. and so does the cat. In Short Circuits, there are two browser extensions that have the objective of making Facebook tolerable. I have recommended and used Social Fixer for many years, but recently switched to fluff-busting Purity. The developers of both apps are battling hundreds, if not thousands, of Meta developers, but the Social Fixer team seems to have been defeated, at least for now. Fluffbusting Purity, or FB Purity for short, previously known as Facebook Purity, is a web browser extension designed to customize the Facebook website's user interface and to add some functionality. Developed by Steve Fernandez, a UK-based programmer, it was first released in 2009 as a Grease Monkey script. It is available for Firefox, Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Safari, Opera, Brave, and Maxthon. Social Fixer was developed by Matt Cruz. The project was originally called Better Facebook as a tool for him personally to remove the annoyances of Facebook. Cruz and several other developers, most notably Bella Lupkin, Patricia O'Reilly, and Ed Siff, have maintained the app, but seem to have been defeated by Facebook developers who have made it difficult or impossible for Social Fixer to remove advertisements and other dreck. They are working on it. One problem with both Social Fixer and FB Purity is that they work only within a web browser version of Facebook, not the app provided to Android and iOS users. Neither developer has created an app for users of mobile devices, probably because of Meta's litigious legal department. Still, if you use Facebook with a web browser, there is hope. There is the ability to eliminate the torrent of advertisements, spams, and scams. Meta continuously modifies the techniques it uses to identify ads. Until recently, both Social Fixer and FB Purity were able to deal with the modifications, but Social Fixer lost that ability in mid-2024 and seems to have been unable to recover so far. FB Purity continues to be able to strip the unwanted content. Although Social Fixer offers more improvements and visual tweaks than FB Purity does, currently it fails at its primary task, that of eliminating the never-ending stream of advertisements and suggested posts. Suggested here is a synonym for sponsored. Getting to the computer's BIOS screen used to be easy. The Windows boot process was relatively slow, and pressing the correct key at the right time wasn't difficult. But boot processes are faster now, and you may have to restart the computer several times as you flail to press Escape, F2, F8, or whatever the manufacturer has chosen to get to the BIOS screen. Well, enough of that. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just click an icon on the desktop and be taken directly to the BIOS screen? Well, you can, but you have to create the icon, so now I'm going to explain how. Right-click anywhere on the desktop, click New, then click Shortcut. In the Location of Item box, type shutdown space forward slash R space forward slash FW forward slash T, and then a number. The number indicates how long you want to wait before rebooting the computer. I use 2 seconds currently. The slash R switch specifies the full shutdown followed by a restart. Slash FW specifies that you want to reboot to the BIOS screen. And T, as I already explained, is where you specify the delay time. Then click Next. Specify a name for the icon on the next screen. I used BIOS screen for that. When you click the Finish button, your new icon will be placed on the desktop. Right-click the icon and choose the Advanced option. Click Run as Administrator, and then click OK. When you want to reboot the computer to the BIOS screen, double-click the icon, accept the user account control warning, and your computer will restart after waiting for the period you specify in the timeout setting and go directly to the BIOS screen. Isn't that easy? Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.